It's time for Voice of the Public from KRWG Public Media. And we're going to talk about the economy with economist Dr. Jim Peach. He joins us right after NPR News to talk about economics from a local to a state to a national to an international level. And your questions and comments are welcome, as always, on Voice of the Public. Today, the National Employment and Unemployment Report was released from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. How does it look?
One was non-farm payroll employment, which went up 855,000, and that's a really strong number right there. It's much higher than what the consensus forecast was, of about 700,000. The other thing that people will notice is the unemployment rate, which, despite the growth in jobs, went up a little bit.
We'll begin right after NPR News on KRWG Public Media. 106. Welcome to Voice of the Public on KRWG Public Media. Today is July 2nd. Yesterday, the new fiscal year began for the state of New Mexico. We'll talk about how the economy looks as it rebounds from the pandemic with economist Dr. Jim Peach, who joins us once again for Voice of the Public. Welcome back to KRWG.
Thank you.
How's the summer been treating you so far?
Busy.
Very busy. And we have so much to discuss today. There are so many interesting things happening as the economy starts to rebound from the pandemic. A bit of a double-edged sword, if you will, in our short intro before NPR News. You mentioned the unemployment and employment report from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So I'd like to start there and tell us what your overall impressions are.
It's in some ways, it's a very good report. The 855,000 jobs that were added nationally is a really good number. It is much larger than the consensus forecast of about 700,000. On the other hand, the unemployment rate ticked up just a little bit, from 5.8 to 5.9%. And that discrepancy occurs because there are two different surveys. One is a survey of employers, that gives you the number of jobs. The other is a survey of households, and that gives the unemployment rate. Jobs, one of the things that happens is that individuals can hold more than one job. Many people do. So they're often in conflict. But that was very good.
Are the unemployment numbers and those surveys from those households, does that tend to lag behind the increases in jobs that are available?
No, they're simply different. They are both released on the same day. What lags behind are the state numbers. We won't get the June numbers for New Mexico or for local areas for another 3 or 4 weeks.
I can recall, I think maybe it was the March numbers and the April numbers that were kind of disappointing in terms of the return of jobs. What do you think we can attribute the acceleration this month to?
Well, part of it is that we didn't do very well in April and May compared to what was expected, and this might be looked as a little bit of a catch-up. But it's also true that other indicators of economic activity have been increasing dramatically. Consumer spending, consumer confidence, the demand for goods and services has just gone way up. We're likely to see a very, very strong increase in gross domestic product for the second quarter after a strong one for the first quarter.
109, and before I get any further into the conversation with Dr. Peach, if you have questions or comments, call 575-646-2212, 575-646-2212. And if you're following along on Facebook, you can always chime in on Facebook with a question or comment there. And thank you for joining us today for Voice of the Public. So you sound overall pretty optimistic about the direction the economy is headed.
Oh, yes. I'm a Cubs fan. I'm always optimistic, despite the last couple of games, which were among the worst that we've seen. And the same thing is true of the economy. I'm optimistic. it is hard not to be. We pumped about $6 trillion into the economy, the federal government has, not counting what the Federal Reserve has done. And they've been buying $120 billion worth of stuff, mainly U.S. treasuries, but some mortgage-backed securities for quite a while. So between those two sources of stimulus, it would be shocking if we didn't see strong economic growth.
Is there down the road and repaying that money and recovering that money? How do we right ourselves after all of these measures that were taken?
We may never pay it back. The nation has been in debt since 1789. That's when the Constitution was in effect. We came close to eliminating the public debt under Andrew Jackson in 1836, but didn't quite get there. We may never pay it back, and we don't have to. Governments are different from households and individuals and corporations. And it's a strange kind of thing that people make a comparison of the federal deficit or the federal debt to individual or corporate debt. The federal government, for example, has a different way of accounting things. Corporations have a capital budget. If they invest in a long-term investment, say a building or a railroad invests in a locomotive, that's depreciated over many, many years. For the federal government, that's a current expense. So even the accounting is different.
You mentioned consumer confidence being up, and of course, so are gas prices and home prices and even prices of chicken wings.
Sure.
Let's talk a little bit about inflation and what we should expect in terms of whether this is going to be very short term or not.
If you listen to Jay Powell at the Federal Reserve or Janet Yellen, this is going to be short term. I think it's going to last several months, not because of what we've done on the policy side, but what we've got some supply bottlenecks. You know, there's plenty of oil and gasoline right now. The price of gasoline is skyrocketing, not because we're short of gasoline, but because we're short of truck drivers to deliver it to the stations. There are all kinds of things going on. Lumber prices hit an all-time record a month and a half ago, but lumber prices have come down by about half that in the last 6 weeks.
Do you think we'll see a resurgence in more home building now? Real estate we could probably spend a whole hour on alone.
Oh, you bet. And that's an important sector in the economy. The real estate market is really, really strange. During the pandemic, people wanted to get out of the big city, wanted to move to the suburbs, and there's a huge increase in the demand for single-family housing. The builders had not yet started building all of that. And then they ran into supply bottlenecks, not only with lumber, but with employees. And so prices skyrocketed. But there are indications now that people are moving back into the cities. In New York, for example, the price of apartments is going way, way up now after it had fallen dramatically during the first several months of the pandemic.
So you think we're maybe on the cusp of a bit of a buyer's market, or do you think those high prices are going to hold?
Oh, goodness. I don't think we're going to see a decrease in prices, but we're likely to see the supply bottleneck of housing decrease in most parts of the country.
The supply bottleneck, was that all pandemic related?
It was pandemic related in the sense of the increase in demand exposed the fact that we hadn't been building a lot of houses. And we hadn't been building a lot of houses since the Great Recession more than a decade ago when we had this huge housing bust.
Why do you think that? I would say what you're describing is that the housing market didn't really recover yet from 08.
Oh, it did not. We're not building as many single family houses now as we were then, but a lot of what was being built in 06 or 07 was speculative. It wasn't for people to live in.
We've heard that this particular increase in prices from some economists say this is not a bubble. Should we expect, you've said that you think that the prices are going to hold. Do you feel like it's a safe time to either try to buy or sell a home?
Oh, goodness. I wouldn't want to give anybody that kind of advice. Generally speaking, over the last half century or so, buying a home has been a good investment for the middle class. Home prices creep up a little bit every year, except during the Great Recession.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens in terms of, you know, our local markets. I think, you know, Las Cruces tends to be a little bit of a hotter market than, say, just down the road in El Paso. But El Paso, which has been fairly insulated from a lot of those big swings, especially that we saw in 08, did see a huge increase in home values.
Yes. The median price of housing in El Paso has gone up fairly substantially over the last year.
Excited to see my next tax bill.
Ah.
575-646-2212, the number to call if you have a question for Dr. Peach. We're talking about the economy today on Voice of the Public. Let's delve into some specific sectors, Dr. Peach, that are seeing the biggest jumps in numbers, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics report today.
You bet. One of the encouraging ones is the sector that was hit hardest, and that's hospitality and tourism. And nationally, of the 855,000 jobs net increase last month, 343,000 of those were in hospitality and tourism. And that's a really good sign that people are going back to the restaurants and bars and hotels and casinos and entertainment venues. That's a good sign nationally. To a lesser extent, the same thing is happening in New Mexico. New Mexico has had some substantial increases in hospitality and tourism in the last few months. We still lag behind where we were before the pandemic started. That's true nationally. In New Mexico, we're still down about 12 or 13,000 jobs in that sector alone from where we were just before the pandemic started.
And New Mexico had some of the strictest pandemic restrictions in the nation, too. So that seems to make sense.
But I think that helped us come back quicker than a lot of places. If people are afraid, they're not going to go to restaurants and bars.
And with over 60% of the state's eligible population vaccinated, obviously all restrictions on businesses were lifted as of yesterday. So what do you think we're going to see here in the next few weeks and months in terms of job growth in New Mexico?
I think we'll see substantial increases if the Delta variant doesn't rear its ugly head in New Mexico too badly. Certainly the opening that occurred July 1, that was yesterday, will help, and it will help especially restaurants, hotels, bars, and entertainment venues. That's a fairly big deal, and we should see substantial gains in employment over the next few months.
Some states decided to end the federal additional unemployment payments to workers, Texas being one of them.
Right.
New Mexico did not, and those will continue, I believe, through September. And so there are some criticisms that those additional payments have kept people from returning to work. So today, the governor announced a return to work support payment for people who go back to work in the next few weeks. They could receive as much as a one-time $1,000 supplement from the Department of Workforce Solutions. There's kind of a sliding scale in terms of the earlier you go back, the more money you get. Do you think that will motivate people who are struggling with the various reasons that they're not going back to work?
I think that's probably a good policy to implement. That's not bad at all. That when you look at the labor market nationally and locally within the state, there are multiple reasons why people choose not to come back into the labor force. One of the things that's often overlooked is that during the pandemic, a lot of people accelerated their retirement date and just said, you know, I'm going to bail out of this. And so as a result, we have fewer people participating in the labor force, a smaller percentage of the population. The other thing, of course, is a mismatch between geographically, between where the jobs are and where the people are. And if you are a fairly low income person, but you perhaps you own a house or have a lease on a house, you can't just pack up instantly and go because there are jobs opening up somewhere else. We've had a problem with daycare for children for years that really came to light during the pandemic. And, you know, if you're going back to work for a $15 an hour job and you have to pay $12 an hour to have somebody watch a kid, that's a tough situation. There are all kinds of reasons.
It seems like, I mean, we could spend a lot of time on this particular issue as
well.
There was an announcement recently that more families would qualify for assistance for childcare to help them get back to work. But at the same time, that industry is one of those that is struggling for workers. I was talking with El Paso Matters CEO Bob Moore last Friday about what's going on in El Paso and the lack of childcare. So there's just people are just struggling to find someplace, even if they paid $100 an hour. There's really no place to take their children, partly because of the migrant shelter for youth in El Paso. And the federal government is hiring daycare workers at $17 an hour, where they normally make $8.
Now, some of that will disappear when school starts up in August. And we're likely to have schools both in El Paso and in New Mexico fully open by August, with most kids, not all, but most, going back to in-person classes. And that should ease up the labor market just a little bit.
We've talked about some of the sectors that are thriving and bouncing back really well. Let's talk about some of those that you see as struggling to get back.
Let me start off with a really important industry for New Mexico, and that's the oil and gas industry. And that industry has bounced back in terms of production. March and April, New Mexico set production records, monthly production records. But employment has not come back. In the two most important sectors, exploration and production, as well as service companies, New Mexico had about 26,000 direct employees before this started. We now have about 17,000. So that industry has come back in terms of production. And drilling, we have 75 rigs going today. We had 48 a year ago. It's a pretty healthy increase. There are lots of things going on there, but the employment has not come back like you might have expected. Part of that is a success story. Each rig is producing more oil when it goes into production, and it takes fewer workers. So some of that may never come back.
And there will probably be other sectors that will have some of that same scenario, right?
You bet. A big one in New Mexico, of course, is retail trade. And we're still down in employment and retail trade, 10 or 12,000 people from where it was before the pandemic began. But retail trade had been in trouble for a long, long time. In New Mexico, in January of 2020, we had 1,000 fewer employees in retail trade than we did in January of 2000, 20 years earlier. That had been, in terms of growth, that had been a stagnant industry mm-hmm. for 20 years. And we may see a little bit of it come back. But people have changed their buying habits. We all buy more on the internet. We all have things delivered. There's going to be a big shakeout in retail.
I feel like if I did it, and I did it for the first time the other day for any type of clothing, and especially shoes, I felt like I could never buy a pair of shoes on the internet because my feet are so weird. I always have to try them on. But I did it because there was a great deal and they came in and they fit. And I feel like, maybe I'm jumping on board. But then I feel guilty at the same time, Dr. Right. Peach.
You know, I solved that problem by always ordering the same pair of shoes. but like everybody else, you know, there are a lot of us going to the store, sitting down, have somebody waiting on you, bringing you shoes to try on and talking to you. That's a social event, and we all enjoy that. It's not going to disappear entirely, but we're all buying a lot more over the internet and through mail order and all kinds of stuff than we used to.
Do you foresee a lot more empty retail space in the near future, and what will happen to it?
It's a huge question, not only in New Mexico, but nationally. And my guess is that some of the big box stores are going to shut down, and we'll have lots of retail space available. In some parts of the country, malls have been converted into office space for doctors and lawyers and the like. There's going to be a lot of commercial real estate available.
575-646-2212 is the number to call. This is Voice of the Public on KRWG Public Media. Casey Counts here along with economist Dr. Jim Peach, who is back to talk about the economy with the start of the new fiscal year for New Mexico. We were talking just a moment ago about the oil and gas industry, and I wanted to touch on the prediction for the Biden infrastructure plan. If it becomes a reality, and what that will mean in terms of green energy jobs in New Mexico.
You bet. The first thing is, and I think on both sides of the aisle, there's a recognition that we are falling badly behind nationally on infrastructure. We're just not investing enough. We not only have deteriorating roads and bridges and a power grid that needs attention, we're not investing in the future like we need to. We need more broadband. We need electric vehicle charging stations. We need all kinds of stuff just to compete in a increasingly international economy and a high-tech economy. We used to be the high-tech leaders of the world. But in many areas, we're falling behind. So we need that stuff.
I guess
the bipartisan infrastructure deal, which is likely to go through, I think, unless somebody gets mad, that's nice. I don't think it's large enough. For New Mexico, we've got plenty of needs. There's money in there for broadband. New Mexico certainly needs broadband. There is money in there for roads and bridges. That's all good. There's even a little bit of airport money. And we could use some of that as well. There's lots in it that will affect New Mexico. Nobody can say exactly what that will mean because the bill hasn't been passed yet.
Mm-hmm. It was a long road to get to the bill that we ultimately got to. And you did mention that you didn't think it was big enough. One of the points of contention was how to define infrastructure. And you obviously see it as being an infrastructure of the future. But there are some cases where representatives and senators don't believe that clean water or broadband are things that make up infrastructure.
I know. And that's all silliness. We need, you know, economists have been talking about, it's a term called social overhead capital. It's broader than infrastructure for at least a half a century, at least since the 1960s. And it, you know, even our educational institutions from preschool all the way through graduate school need an injection of money. If we are to compete in a modern world, that's really important. We need kids to be educated, or we don't have a chance. In New Mexico, we need truly excellent education and vocational training at all levels. We need universities that can compete with the best, at least in the surrounding states. And we've got some good universities. Don't get me wrong. I worked for one of them for quite a while. UNM, NMSU, and Tech do some really good things. But we don't play in the major leagues in terms of research. And that's what a lot of firms want to see. They move to places that have truly excellent research universities. And so we need to put more money into that as well. And whether that comes from the federal government or the state government doesn't really matter.
Let's talk a little bit about the past. Looking back over the last year and 3 months or so, what things do you think were done right and wrong during the pandemic to keep the economy afloat?
In New Mexico or nationally?
You can cover both.
Okay. Nationally, one of the things that was done right was the development of the vaccine. That was a remarkable effort, and Operation Warp Speed should be given a lot of credit for doing that. No one expected it to happen as quickly as it did. Another thing that was done right nationally was starting really in January of this year was to get the vaccine out. A distribution problem that was immense, and we've been very successful at that. So those two things were done right. I think at the national level, the inconsistency of the advice we got during the first several months of the pandemic, to the extent of high-level government officials somehow saying that it wasn't really a pandemic, and including the former president, I think that hurt us. It kept people from doing the kinds of things, social distancing and masking, that we know that worked even before the vaccine was available. At the state level, I actually think we've done a remarkable job. And the officials in charge at the state level, Dr. Scrace and others, who would be a good guest for you sometime. He's really good. I think they did a remarkable job. I know that there was a lot of criticism of shutting places down, but I think it was the right thing to do, and I think we would be in a worse place today if we had not done it. We have also in New Mexico had remarkable success with the vaccines. We, until just a couple of weeks ago, we were always in the top two or three states in terms of the percentage of the adult population that had been vaccinated. And since then, a couple of other states have pushed us out of kind of the lead, but we got a lot of national attention for doing things right in New Mexico. And that's a really good thing.
Still maybe 35%+ of the population, and of course anyone under 12 has not been able to right. receive a vaccine yet. How concerned are you that the Delta, now they're calling it Delta Plus variant, is circulating so fast in the United States? Are you concerned that it's going to be a problem for us here?
I think it could be. And I listened to the national experts. I heard Dr. Fauci this morning. I heard Dr. Gottlieb talking about it, practically begging the unvaccinated to go get vaccinated. We all know people who are vaccine resistant for one reason or another. These vaccines have been demonstrated to be incredibly safe and incredibly effective. Missouri has had an upsurge in the Delta variant, and they're one of the least vaccinated states. So as Oklahoma, Alabama, Louisiana, it is almost, there's a really strong correlation. If you don't get vaccinated, you get an upsurge in cases. We've done pretty well. I wish the other 30 or 40% of the population would go out and get vaccinated. I really do.
575-646-2212. Economist Dr. Jim Peach is on with us today to discuss what we can expect moving forward as the economy recovers and rebounds from the COVID-19 pandemic and the beginning of the fiscal year here in New Mexico. Why don't you give us a picture of what the numbers are looking like for the new fiscal year?
Absolutely. For state revenue, it is looking better than anyone, and that includes me and a lot of others who play around with such things. It's looking better than anyone expected. Part of that is the resurgence of oil production and oil prices, both of which are much higher than were anticipated. So the state gets a lot of revenue from that industry, and that revenue stream has gone way up over expectations. Retail trade, our gross receipts taxes have gone way up compared to what anyone thought. So the budget is looking good. And then we have all kinds of federal money. And you mentioned one use of that, the return to work subsidy just announced. But people are scrambling in Santa Fe to figure out how to spend all this federal money.
There is an argument, maybe that's not the correct word, but there seems to be some disagreement over whether the legislature should control the disbursement of the money or whether it should remain in the governor's hands. Tell us a little bit about the back and forth on that.
Oh, yeah. And this is not the first time such an argument like this has occurred. It occurred most recently during the Great Recession in 2009-2010. But both branches of government want control over this. I think it's a rather, I shouldn't say this because I've got friends in both branches, but it's a rather silly argument. You ought to sit down together, decide what the state needs to do, and do it.
Do you think the priorities are significantly different?
No, not really. Not really. Both sides want some credit for how this is distributed and how it's spent. Both sides want some accountability over how it's spent. And I think that's proper on both sides.
Indeed. We don't want to be asking questions a year from now and not be able to tell where the money went. Yeah.
The downside of this is the need for tax reform of some sort in New Mexico has been apparent for decades. We get too much of our revenue from a single industry. That industry is very volatile. Oil and gas is what I'm talking about. The cushion that we've got right now probably means that we won't take any sort of action in the next legislative session on reforming the tax system. And we really need to do that. And there are many ways to do it.
What do you think is the ideal way, or can you put that into a picture for us?
Oh, you know, we've had in 2004 when Bill Richardson was governor, we had a huge income tax cut. Under Governor Martinez, we had a corporate income tax cut. We can't, right now, there's a proposal before the legislature to not tax Social Security income. There are other proposals to cut taxes. The first thing we need to do is to recognize that now is no time to start cutting taxes. Now, how do you raise revenue? We've got all kinds of loopholes in the GRT that we could close, or we could go to a value-added tax and just start over again. That might be the, in some ways, as odd as it sounds, that might be the easiest way to do it. Then there are all kinds of things. We have not raised the gasoline tax, which is a per gallon tax in the state, since 1993. Autos and light trucks have become much more efficient. We need to raise the gasoline tax. You could tax plastic bottles. And I proposed that a couple of years ago in a room full of people from the New Mexico Senate, two committees, each of whom had a plastic water bottle in front of them on their desk. And that didn't go very well. But there are...
Did you get hit with a few of them from...
No. They just laughed and said, oh, that's just Jim sounding off again. But it is true. We could raise $20 or $30 million a year from taxing plastic bottles.
Obviously, plastics are a huge problem the world
for
over.
For a lot of reasons. Yeah. For a lot of reasons. We can tax electric vehicles. And that may sound odd, but lots of states do it.
Well, as more people drive.
They're no longer paying gasoline taxes to support the road.
Right. So you have to look for some way to have participation from those electric car drivers. Let's talk a little bit about the new industry coming to New Mexico. Laws governing possession of marijuana changed last week. Possession now legal for adults 21 and over, and sales expected to begin in April of next year. What is your impression in terms of what this industry in particular will mean for New Mexico?
The only thing I can really say is based on the experience in other states, and some other states, including our northern neighbor, Colorado, have had substantial increases in revenue by taxing legal marijuana. But they've also had a huge increase in expenses. You've got to regulate that industry. You've got to license stores. You've got all kinds of things that will require expenditures as well as just raking in the dollars. So I don't expect it to have a substantial influence on the budget. I just don't.
It certainly will not be any oil and gas industry.
No.
But we maybe have to think about combining different kinds of industries to diversify our economy. Let's discuss what's happening at Spaceport America. Will Bezos or Branson get to space first?
Before we leave marijuana, one of the benefits to the state may be that we have a fewer people in jail, and that reduces costs. But the spaceport, I love to talk about the spaceport. I've been talking about it for years and years and years. Branson says he's going to beat Bezos into space, and that may be the case. Branson says he's going to do it a week from Sunday. Bezos a little bit later in July. I don't think that's very significant. What would be significant is for New Mexico is if Virgin Galactic really does start taking paying passengers, as they now say, early in 2022, and that would be a big boost. From the beginning, the economic impacts of the spaceport, the most likely big impacts were tourist dollars. You bring a lot of people in to watch the launch. You bring people in who can afford $250,000 or so for a 15-minute ride into space, and they have to have places to spend their money. That hasn't really happened yet. So if Branson doesn't kill himself on this ride, I've said from the beginning on this, this has a lot of potential if we don't kill the first seven people going into space.
Yeah, nobody wants that. But, you know, for the long haul, in terms of the benefits of a spaceport, right, we look at the possibility for people and cargo to travel from one side of the globe to the other in a very short amount of time. And I would think that would eclipse the tourist aspect, maybe.
No, and I hope it's successful. You know, from the beginning, what we don't do very well in New Mexico is ask whether or not this expenditure of public funds on an economic development project are the best things that we can do. We never asked in the spaceport design, would it be better to spend $200 million fixing up the state parks if you're trying to attract tourism and museums and rest areas than it would on the spaceport? Now, I don't know the answer to that.
Well, the
we never asked the questions.
And the burden rested solely on Sierra County and Doñana County taxpayers, if I'm not incorrect.
But the state has put up a lot of money as well and has subsidized the spaceport every single year for operations. And so the public, whether it's Sierra County and Doñana County and a little bit of Otero County, whether it's those three counties that you're looking at, or whether it's the state, it's public money that we've been pouring into the spaceport. It has not yet given us a return that would make up for all of that.
What kind of return should we be looking for?
A positive return of some sort.
Jobs.
We should be looking at jobs. We should be looking at income. We should be looking at increased tax revenue to the state to offset what we've spent on this. Doesn't mean I'm against it. I'd love to see the spaceport be very, very successful. I really would. It has not, to date, met the expectations of that the state had when it was being constructed.
575-646-2212, the telephone number to call. You have a question for economist Dr. Jim Peach. Better get it in quick because we only have just a little over 10 minutes to go for today's Voice of the Public. And if you're watching along on Facebook, you can also submit a comment or question there. We appreciate having you along today. Any way you listen and or watch Voice of the Public on KRWG Public Media. So thank you for joining us. I'd like to ask you a question about cryptocurrency. We've been hearing... I think if you're especially a male between the ages of 25 and 45 or 50, it seems to be a really hot topic of conversation. And we hear a lot about it on NPR. Obviously, a volatile market right now. But what are your thoughts on its longevity?
Well, If it's true that it's mainly males between the ages of 25 and 45.
I just made that up.
Well, even if you didn't make it up. You're from Texas. A good story doesn't have to be always true.
That's true. And we're supposed to have a pass for that, I think.
I was once such a creature, and I did a lot of crazy things. But I don't think even at that age I would have invested in cryptocurrency. With Bitcoin, there's a transaction fee if you want to try to spend it. And so it's not, and the transaction fee right now directly with Bitcoin is about $20. So you're not going to go to the local coffee house and buy a cup of coffee and use Bitcoin. It is unregulated. The dollar has been a pretty good currency for a couple of hundred years. I have no interest in the digital stuff. And people say, well, digital is the wave of the future, but your dollars are already digital. You keep very little in cash on you. The rest of it's in the bank, and that means it's already digital.
So you're not eschewing the whole idea of the future. What it sounds like is kind of a conversation that I can recall having maybe 20, 25 years ago about whether the radio station that I worked at the time needed a website. And there were people that were naysayers on this new internet thing. And so it's one of those questions that you have. Is this just something new and it's the wave of the future, but we're suspicious of it or not?
It is horribly energy inefficient. We spend a lot of electricity on Bitcoin and Dogecoin and the others. I think we're in an era in which energy efficiency, not energy inefficiency, is something that's really important. And I think around the world, central banks have not figured out how to deal with this yet. Mm-hmm. They just mm-hmm. haven't.
And I think there are a lot of folks who like that aspect of it.
Oh, you bet. You bet. And at the margin, you know, it may be easier to hide criminal activity using various forms of digital currency than it is to use greenbacks. But try to go to the grocery store and spend it. A currency really needs to be two or three things. It needs to be a medium of exchange. And that means that you and I need to accept it. And so do the merchants we deal with. It needs to be a store of value. And with the volatility that we've seen recently, Bitcoin is now selling for about half of what it did a couple of months ago, but a lot more than it was a couple of years ago. What do you do with that kind of volatility? The dollar has not appreciated or depreciated that much against other currencies in several years. Give me the dollar. Call me old-fashioned if you like, but I have no interest in digital currency.
All right. Well, we'll leave that there. Let's move on to, since we just touched on it a little bit, the international economy. And obviously there are parts of the world many parts of the world where populations are 1 to 5% vaccinated. And let's take a look at what that means for the international economy.
Absolutely. And what it means, and India is a good example. India is going through some really rough times, not only in terms of health right now, but in terms of economic activity. And other places. Australia is having an upsurge. South Asia is having upsurges in this. So it will disrupt them not only from a health perspective, but from an economic perspective. The other thing that the pandemic has done, of course, has disrupted supply chains. We depend we depend on other nations for the chips that go into automobiles. And just go drive by an auto dealer and look at their inventory. Their lots are empty right now. Now, that may change. At least the automakers are saying it's going to change, but it's going to take a while for that to work out. So it's not, we are so interconnected that we've got to solve the problem worldwide, not just here at home.
I'm glad you brought the auto industry into the conversation. I had it in red on my sheet, written in red, but I was going to let time run out on us. But we do have Barry on the line, 575-646-2212. Hi, Barry. Thanks for calling. How are you?
Great. Hi, Mr. Peace. Thanks for being on the show.
Oh, you bet.
So listen, I got a general question, and I was listening to the news a while ago, and I've always been curious about this, and they were talking about the deficit and the U.S. printing money. And that the tipping point was the only thing we had to worry about. And I think they mentioned the tipping point would be the gross national product. As long as the debt wasn't higher than the income from the GDP, we have nothing to worry about. I was wondering if you could expound about that a little bit. And I'm afraid I'm going to have to hang up, and I'm at work, listen to your response on the radio.
Well, thank you for sneaking away, Barry, to check in. We appreciate hearing from you.
Be glad to do that. I don't know if I can do it in a minute and a half, but first make a distinction between the deficit, which is an annual number or a current number, and the debt, which is the accumulated debt of the United States. We've been in debt since 1789. It hasn't been the end of the Republic. As for a tipping point, the very famous study that was done a few years ago by Rogoff and a couple of other economists was demonstrated. They said that once the percentage of debt to GDP got to some certain level, that economic growth rates would taper off. Only they had a huge error in their spreadsheet, which was exposed by a master's degree student in economics at the University of Syracuse. And there is no evidence of that. Japan has had huge deficits since 1990, 1991, and nothing. It is a really complicated story. An increase in the deficit is alleged to increase interest rates. But we've had these huge deficits. We've had very low interest rates. It just doesn't work the way the textbooks say it works.
It's 1:58, and I want to thank you for taking the time to join us, Dr. Peach. You mentioned right at the beginning of the show, because I said pointed out how optimistic you sounded in general about the economy and about coming back from the pandemic, and you said you were an optimist in part because you were a Cubs fan.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to tell you, I will be celebrating a dear friend of mine's 50th birthday by tagging along to a couple of Cubs games in just a couple of weeks in Phoenix.
There's nothing like it. It's great fun. Wednesday, the Cubs were up 7-0 in the first inning and lost the game 15-7. It has to be one of the worst games ever.
Well, sounds like it's time for a turnaround then. And so, one final question for you: should I sell my car right now to the highest bidder?
No, no, not unless the highest bidder is kind of crazy and way overpays you. You're going to need a car.
But I have an extra lying around.
Ah, well, that might be different. But I think electric vehicles are going to be the wave of the future.
And obviously a long way to go to get that. What's the word? Infrastructure.
Yes. Yeah.
And what is your prediction in terms of when it will be more feasible for people to buy and drive an electric vehicle every day?
No, I would buy one if it was not range constrained. But I sometimes drive from here to San Diego or here to Oklahoma City in a single day, and I can't currently do that in an EV. So we need improved batteries. We need rapid chargers everywhere. And then I think there's no stopping the electric vehicle.
And there's obviously been a lot of announcements from all car makers on their new electric models. So it's exciting to see.
You bet.
All right. Economist Dr. Jim Peach, thank you so much for being a part of Voice of the Public. Have a great 4th of July weekend and come back and see us soon.
And Casey, thank you. And you have a great weekend as well. It's always fun to talk to you.
Coming up next on KRWG Public Media, Leora Zeitlin has Intermezzo by Request. And this afternoon at 4 o'clock, Fred Martino will be joining you for All Things Considered. Have a wonderful weekend and stay tuned for Intermezzo by Request with Leora Zeitlin. And thank you to our engineer, Mark Johnson, for answering the phone, but mainly for keeping us on the air today. And thank you for being here.